Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings. It's time for Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and today is Reptile Day here on the show. I've got Rob Souza with me in the studio. He's a reptile expert, and I'm really excited to have him on. Rob's career all started at the age of 14 when he rescued a friend's unwanted pet, a corn snake. That's when he began building his collection of exotics. At one time, he maintained and cared for more than 500 animals. That experience led him to serving as vice president of the now inactive New York Herpetological Society. For just under a decade, Rob worked with them, breeding and selling his reptiles and working with the Center for Animal Care and Control Exotics Adoption Program in New York City. Presently, Rob's focus is working with a network of people that are striving to maintain regional variants of snakes from around the country as their habitats continue to be replaced by housing in strip malls. During the time that Rob worked for the CACC, he rescued many reptiles that were either abandoned or neglected. This means to me they're not as easy to take care of as people think, but we're going to talk about that and other reptile topics today. Welcome, Rob, and thanks for coming in. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
I'm so excited to have you in the studio today. I think a lot of people think that reptiles are kind of an edgy pet to have and that they're really easy to take care of. I'm sorry. What are your thoughts on that?
It depends. I mean, in the world of reptiles, you have things like pygmy chameleons that grow to an inch as adults.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other spectrum, you have monitor lizards that get over 10 feet long. some large pythons that easily hit 18 feet.
Wow. So I want to talk a little bit about your rescue experiences. When you were doing it, how many reptiles would you rescue in a week? And why were they dumped?
I'd rescue about a dozen animals a week on average.
Wow.
More in the summer.
Wow.
In the summer, easily 3 or 4 dozen a week.
Wow.
And they're abandoned for various reasons. People get bored of mm-hmm. their pets. The pets get larger than they expected and outgrow their enclosures.
Mm-hmm.
Or food becomes too costly.
Mm-hmm.
And food and care.
I can only imagine what something huge eats and how expensive that would be. You know, like the bigger snakes and stuff like that. So what should people consider before they get a reptile?
Before they get a reptile, I think you definitely have to consider adult size first.
Mm-hmm.
How big is the animal going to get?
That's a good point.
And then costs associated with acquiring enclosures and food, vet bills, vitamin mm-hmm. supplements, things like that.
And so, in terms of like vet bills and stuff like that, what are you looking at? Like, if you get a reptile, I'm assuming take it straight to a vet to make sure it's okay and all that.
It is a good idea when you first acquire a reptile to take it to a vet and at the very least have like a fecal study done
mm-hmm.
to check for internal parasites, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And that can run anywhere from $50 to a couple of $100, depending on the vet.
Okay.
And then after that, a checkup once a year is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at about the same amount of money.
So are there any diseases that reptiles have that people can get?
There are not diseases necessarily, but there are, for example, things like salmonella
mm-hmm.
are always present on reptiles.
Okay.
They don't have a negative effect on the reptile unless the reptile becomes sick in okay. some other way. But they can make us sick, so it's really important to wash your hands after you handle your reptiles.
Okay, and that's something that's naturally found on the animal. So,
yes.
Like, if you bathe the animal, it's not going to come off kind of thing.
No.
Okay, good. What about safety in terms of reptiles? Do you think they're more dangerous than other pets?
I don't. The reptiles that are most commonly kept as pets, no. But again, when you're dealing with a snake that's 18 foot long or a lizard that's 10 foot long and 40 pounds, they can inflict some damage.
I'll bet they can. And do they ever get tame?
They don't. they're not domesticated animals. They're not cats and dogs. They don't bond with their owners the way a lot of more traditional pets do. They do grow to recognize their owners mm-hmm. and recognize feeding time and cleaning time and things like that. And they do grow, they do learn to tolerate being handled,
mm-hmm.
but there's no natural desire to interact with humans the way you have with some other pets.
So this is if you want something that you can really play games with or like cuddle with, a reptile's probably not for you.
No, definitely
okay.
not.
Okay. Have you ever rescued any of the animals from the sewers? Like, is there anything about that whole urban legend that there's albino alligators in the New York City sewage system?
No, that's just a legend. And no, I haven't rescued anything from the sewers. If you put something in the sewer, it's going to die. It's cold and dirty down there. I have, though, gone into abandoned lots.
Yeah.
And pulled reptiles that were dumped out of there, city parks and small ponds and things like that. A lot of the reptiles that I rescued were left behind when people moved in abandoned apartments and things like that. And I've had some interesting experiences. I got a call from Customs at LaGuardia Airport one time and had to go pick up three pizza boxes with about 3,000 quarter-sized red-eared sliders in them.
Oh, wow!
Those small turtles that essentially are destined for sale in Chinatown and places like that. And I did actually have to go into an apartment in the Bronx in the 90s and remove a 14-foot Burmese python that had actually killed its owner.
Wow.
That was probably one of the bigger adventures.
So you're busy. This isn't like finding a kitten under a car. It's a little more serious than that. It's unbelievable. It's like, I mean, for me, reptiles are dinosaurs, you know, and they just seem like the way that they move and everything like that, it's so foreign because really my specialization is dogs, cats, and horses.
Right.
I've spent some time with them, but they fascinate me because they really... It's almost like you can see that brain working, and they just kind of go on their own, and they don't really, you know, even ones that are tame will kind of just look at you and be like, what do you want? And then just kind of continue on their day. They don't seem to be, well, as you said, they're not as friendly as, you know, the other types, but they seem to be more kind of doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing in their environment, where like a cat, for example, if they want to play, they'll come bring you a toy, that kind of thing, but they're just kind of living on their own, doing their thing in their enclosure.
They are. They do function for the most part based on instinct and natural programming. That you're not going to teach them tricks the way you would a cat or a dog.
Well, can they respond at all to that kind of thing? Like, can you food train them at all, or...
I mean, you can train them to, they do grow to recognize the approach, the sounds associated mm-hmm. with the approach of their owner, the opening of the cage, even things for those animals that, for those reptiles that eat insects, you know, they can hear the very slight sounds that are made by crickets in a container from mm-hmm. across the room. Snakes definitely have exceptional senses of smell, and, mm-hmm. and they know when their food comes into the room, and they will come out of their enclosures.
Now, somebody told me once that snakes are deaf. Is that true?
They are. Snakes are deaf. They actually don't have external ear openings.
Wow.
They are sensitive, though, to bass tones. They can feel sound.
So the vibrations, like the more vibrations are going on, the more they know it kind of, you know, get out of here quick kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So then when you've got ones in the wild, when, you know, there's so many of these reptiles that get run over by cars and stuff, and I mean, I know part of that is us encroaching on their habitats, but do the vibrations of the car attract them?
They don't attract them. Again, they're operating on instinct.
Mm-hmm.
So as the weather gets colder, they move from where they normally feed to where they hibernate, and they don't really respect whether there's a road there or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these animals have been... following these paths for a lot longer than we've been driving on them.
Yeah, definitely. I want to talk a little bit about, before the show, we were chatting about kind of the history of reptile ownership, and you said some things that were really fascinating to me. Like, when was it that we really started to understand reptiles and have them as pets?
Well, it really wasn't until the 60s that we really started trying to keep reptiles as pets, maintain them for any length of time, mm-hmm. and reproduce them in captivity. Before that, Reptile ownership, reptile collecting was really more of a scientific thing with the goal of classification and understanding how they're related to each other, how they're related to other animals, mm-hmm. and where they fit in to the ecology.
So was there a trend at the time that kind of made it sexy to have a reptile, or was it just curiosity that brought them out? How did they get popular?
Well, you had basically zookeepers started getting more experience and started writing.
Mm-hmm.
And those early writings got into the hands of young people at the time, mm-hmm. who developed an interest in keeping them. I mean, that, to your point earlier, that they're like dinosaurs, they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's some of the allure, is that, you know, you get to keep a dinosaur in your bedroom.
Totally. So. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, my siblings are a lot older than me, and they used to go to the circus. And the big thing was that we could only get food. We could never get toys or prizes. And I don't know who took them. I guess it was a family friend who didn't know the rule and came back with all this stuff. And one of the things that they came back with were like two small boxes that were probably, oh man, maybe 10 inches long by about two or three inches wide by about 2 inches deep. And they had baby alligators in them. And it was like, when my mother first saw them, she thought they were rubber. I don't remember any of this. I was too young, right. Unfortunately. But it was like all of a sudden, you know, you go to the zoo or you go to the circus, give some guy $5, and now you've got a baby alligator.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully the laws have changed and they're a lot more restrictive. So in a lot of states you can't sell alligators and venomous snakes and small turtles, other things that just don't make appropriate pets. But I mean, I think people in general have done a lot of things that, looking back on them, are not such a good idea, mm-hmm. in the name of earning a buck.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think with reptiles too, because they are so exotic and they really are almost otherworldly, you know, compared to what everyone's used to as a pet, really, that to bring them in and show this whole new range of animals that could be like, that are just so unusual, you know, I can see the appeal and how they would get very popular very quickly, especially for people that don't want something that's cute and cuddly and warm and fuzzy, or want something, right. Like more of a conversation piece, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the other side to that too is the care aspect. I mean, cats and dogs have to be, dogs especially, have to be walked every day, that, you know,
yeah.
have to be fed every day. With reptiles, you have the opportunity to own an animal and care for an animal and not necessarily have that kind of a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go on vacation and not have to worry about who's going to walk it.
As long as you have, like, well, they need lights, right? So you'd have to have that on a timer kind of thing, but...
Some reptiles do need lights, mostly diurnal reptiles.
Mm-hmm.
Snakes do not. They don't absorb UV light through their skin the way diurnal the way diurnal lizards do. So as long as they're kept warm and there's water available, mm-hmm. they're good on their own for a little while.
That's really cool, and it makes sense because they're dinosaurs, so they're a little bit slower than our regular ones. Well, we're going to take a break right now. We're going to be talking about reptiles when we come back. I'm with Rob Souza. I am your host, Celia Kutcher. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back more to continue the conversation. So just hang on.
You are listening to 4 of 7 by HRN's own Jack Inslee on Animal Instinct. Only on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
And we're back. So we're talking reptiles with Rob Souza, and now we're going to talk a bit about the pet aspect of these guys. So Rob, what reptiles do you recommend for a beginner?
For beginners interested in keeping reptiles as pets, I would recommend snake-wise king snakes and corn snakes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're interested in a lizard or if an animal without arms and legs freaks you out a little bit, crested geckos, leopard geckos, and bearded dragons also make good beginner.
What do you think about reptiles for kids?
I think that reptiles are okay for kids. But as with any pet, I think as a parent, you have to realize that you're probably going to be the one cleaning it and feeding it.
Yeah.
And I definitely would not, I wouldn't allow a child, say under 8,
mm-hmm.
to handle a reptile unsupervised.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I remember we had them in school for, you know, in our science room in 3rd and 4th grade, and they were pretty much left alone. It was the poor gerbils and the hamsters and the mice that got tortured the most. Everybody was afraid of the snake, so he was kind of safe. You
yeah,
know?
The stuff with fur gets all of the attention. Totally. Usually.
So let's talk about snakes. So we've got the corn and the king snakes are the ones that you recommend. What would be an appropriate environment for them, and like how big?
Enclosure-wise, you can start with something like a 10-gallon tank,
mm-hmm.
10-gallon glass fish tank.
Okay.
There are now a lot of quality beddings that are available, things like aspen shavings or even playground sand.
Okay.
You'll need a water bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You'll need something for the animal to hide in during
okay.
the day so that it can feel safe. And under the tank heater so that it has an area to warm itself up.
Mm-hmm.
Reptiles don't produce their own heat internally.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to digest their food and to remain comfortable, they need to be able to move around the tank to find an appropriate temperature for themselves.
Do they need a space where they can get exercise, or are they not like that?
They're not like that. They don't need a wheel like a hamster.
Okay.
And they don't need to come out of their cage. Interestingly, reptiles' muscles don't atrophy.
Really?
The way mammal muscles do. So they can really sit motionless for weeks at a time.
That's amazing.
Without suffering any damage.
So do you see like depression in reptiles? Because I see it a lot in cats, dogs, and horses.
I don't, no. As long as they're fed
mm-hmm.
and their cage is clean, they're happy.
So if you get a snake and you've got the little cage and you've got the environment, for a water bowl, ceramic or steel, or does it matter?
Either is fine.
Okay. And do you bury it into the bedding or just kind of stick it on the top?
You bury it into the bedding a little bit,
okay.
and that helps reduce the risk of it getting tipped over. They'll get under anything they can and tip it over.
Are there things that you should put in there to give them the ability to do that? Like, should their little hiding place look like a house, or should it just be like a flat slab?
It should look more like a house.
Okay.
And it should be a little bit smaller than you think it needs to be.
Okay.
When they really do feel most secure when they can feel pressure on all sides of their body.
Oh, okay.
So they like having the ability to kind of cram themselves inside of something.
Cool. Okay, cool. And then what do you feed corn and king snakes?
You feed corns and king snakes rodents, just like most reptiles.
Okay.
Most snakes, rather. There are no vegetarian snakes.
Are there any vegetarian reptiles?
There are vegetarian reptiles.
Okay.
Some of the larger diurnal lizards, things like green iguanas and uromastic,
oh, yeah.
stuff like that, are...
Okay.
Full herbivores.
So, feeding time, what do you do for feeding time? Like, what's the correct way to feed a snake?
You want to acquire a food item that has slightly more girth than the widest part of the snake.
Oh, wow.
And you essentially want to put the food item in there and mm-hmm. leave them alone.
And so we're talking live mouse.
It doesn't have to be live.
Okay.
And in my opinion and in my practice, I don't feed live.
Okay.
Most modern chain pet stores will sell frozen rodents.
Mm-hmm.
These rodents are produced in laboratories. It's in some ways cleaner than the meat we eat ourselves. Yeah. It's fine to buy a few and keep them in the freezer.
No GMO mice.
You want to make sure, if you're feeding frozen, you want to make sure that the food item is fully thawed and has gotten to room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And you really just put it in there and leave them alone.
Okay. And how often do you have to do that?
It depends on the snake.
Mm-hmm.
For kings and corn snakes, in the first, if you're getting a baby,
mm-hmm.
In the first year of their life, you're looking at every 4 to 7 days.
Okay.
And for a nice, healthy adult corn snake, you know, I'd feed an appropriate sized food item every 10 to 14 days.
And how big do these guys get?
They max out at about 4 feet.
And how long do they live?
You know, that goes back to what we were talking about earlier and the short amount of time that reptiles have really been kept as pets. We're kind of figuring that out as we go along. But it's not uncommon for kings and corn snakes to live into their late 20s, early 30s.
Wow.
And I mean, I suspect that as we get better at keeping them in captivity, mm-hmm. we'll see those numbers rise to easily 50 to 60 years.
Wow. All right. So if you want a short-term pet, don't get a snake, because
no.
Then poor Rob's going to have to save the thing from a pond or somewhere. All right. I know we're not really discussing turtles and tortoises, but I think it's really, really important to discuss what you think of them and why you don't really necessarily love them as pets.
And I don't. I don't think that they're appropriate pets for beginners, and even for advanced keepers, it's a huge commitment. They require a lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
They are a lot more active and a lot more intelligent than lizards and snakes are.
Mm-hmm.
And from the commitment side, talking about longevity, we still don't know how long turtles live.
Yeah.
There are zoo records of some turtles and tortoises easily living over a century.
Wow.
I mean, you're talking about, possibly having to will a pet to the next generation.
We were talking about that with parrots, with Lorelei Tibbetts, because
mm-hmm.
it's the same thing. You know,
it
some
is.
Live to be 125. But I think people expect it more with the parrots. I don't think people realize that. You know, or let's talk about if you keep a turtle or a tortoise in a small bowl, the whole belief that it's not going to get any bigger because it stays the size of its environment.
That is a common misconception with reptiles, and for a long time was actually the information that was given out at pet shops is that if you cram something into a 10-gallon tank, it'll never get larger than
mm-hmm.
that. And I mean, they do stunt to an extent, but what you really end up getting is things like shell deformities and a really unhappy animal that's just not given enough space to roam.
That's really interesting. I didn't realize it would affect them physiologically. I just thought mentally and, you know, I kind of like stir crazy in a little tiny tank kind of thing. But I want to talk about lizards now. Housing for lizards.
Similar to snakes, for the smaller geckos, crested geckos and leopard geckos can actually live out their entire life in a 10-gallon tank.
Oh, wow.
Of course, you can go larger. And
mm-hmm.
It's like setting up an aquarium for fish. You can buy the little castles and you can make it all pretty.
Oh, cool.
Or you can go real simple and just use newspaper as a substrate and a little water bowl and a little feed cup.
So what do these guys eat?
Both crested geckos and leopard geckos do eat insects.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in most pet shops, you can purchase mealworms and crickets. They're pretty readily available. Crested geckos, interestingly, recently had a commercial diet introduced. It's made by Repache.
Huh.
And it's can be bought online, and it can be bought in places like PetSmart. And it's essentially everything they need in a mixture very similar to baby food.
What do you think of it? Do you think it's palatable?
I do. I know quite a few people that only keep and breed crested geckos
mm-hmm.
and maintain their entire collections on these diets.
Oh, cool. So there's something easy out there. Now, are these guys like, you know, fruit, like greens kind of animals?
They're fruit kind of animals. In the wild, they would eat fruit nectar, overripe fruits,
mm-hmm.
and they'd catch some, you know, whatever insects they could fit in their mouth.
Now, here's a question for you. Is it, if you get a gecko who's, I don't even know, I could be totally wrong, but let's say they're from Brazil. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
their native territory is Brazil. Would it be smarter to feed them fruit that is local in Brazil over something totally random that they may not have there?
No, it's really Brazil. I don't know a whole lot about, but we can use Madagascar.
Let's
as an
use
example.
Madagascar.
There,
it's perfect.
There are day geckos that come out of Madagascar that look very similar to the Geico gecko.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And in the wild, they feed on things like overripe mangoes and overripe bananas.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that smells right,
mm-hmm.
Even things like peach baby food.
Okay.
They'll consume, and it's something that you can actually add their vitamins and minerals directly into.
Nice. So when you get a reptile, you need to worry about vitamin and mineral deficiencies with them?
You do. I mean, just like we need multivitamins,
totally.
They, you know, and in captivity, in the wild, these animals are eating whatever passes in front of them,
mm-hmm.
whatever's available, which means, you know, by default, they have really varied diets.
Yeah.
And are exposed to the opportunity to consume lots of different nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
In captivity, we're restricted by what's commercially available,
yeah.
which is, for the most part, crickets and mealworms.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important that you provide vitamin and mineral supplements to help sort of account for the lack of variety that
mm-hmm.
they would normally get.
And now, do lizards need a heating lamp?
Diurnal lizards do.
Okay.
Things like green iguanas do. They need to be exposed to full spectrum lighting. They actually manufacture some of their own vitamins in their skin.
Mm-hmm.
But the nocturnal geckos, crested geckos and leopard geckos do not need any special lighting. Although, just like with a snake, you'd want to provide some sort of a heat source.
And that's all the time. That's not like turn it off when you go to bed kind of thing.
No, that's okay. All the time.
Okay. Yeah.
You want to leave it on and let them decide when they need to warm up. They'll find the warm spot on their own.
And what's the normal temperature for that?
A safe temperature, you really need a gradient.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of need two thermometers, one on each side of the tank.
Mm, okay.
And for both crested geckos and leopard geckos, you want to set one side to about 74, 75,
mm-hmm.
and the other side to 78 to 82.
Okay. And so do lizards need any kind of stimulation, or are they happy on their own?
Just like snakes, they're happy on their own, doing their natural thing.
It's funny, because lizards to me have so much more of a personality that I almost feel they're more interactive. So it's really, I'm glad you're saying this, because I would immediately think like, oh, my little lizard friend, we're going to hang out. You know, what if he's just like, get away from me, lady, there's no point.
They do grow to tolerate handling,
mm-hmm.
but they don't desire it. And it's interesting, you're not the only person that's mentioned that the difference, feeling different about what attention snakes and lizards need. I think it has to do with the whole arms and legs thing.
I mean, I think you're totally right. Now, honestly, I think Geico has a lot to do with it, too, because that lizard's got so much personality that there's so many times where people will see, like, a dog or a cat on a TV show.
Right.
And then they immediately think, like, you know, all collies are geniuses because Lassie was a genius, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that's one of the problems is that, you know, for people that will, and if you see a lizard in the wild, I mean, if it's a good time of day and they're running around, it's like, oh, wow, look, they're, like, really fun and like to play, you know. But
right.
I love that you're telling us this because, I mean, I had no idea. I really thought that it was more of like a fuzzy animal
right.
over just.
Yeah, even in the wild, the behavior you're seeing is them working. They're hunting. They're looking for opportunities to mate, and they're defending their territory.
And that's basically what they do, right?
Yeah.
So can you give us some resources or websites that you like?
I can. I really like kingsnake.com.
Okay.
And it's really an all-purpose website that that allows access to things like forums where you can post questions and resource and get information
mm-hmm.
on reptiles. There are lists of private and commercial breeders
cool.
where you can actually order your reptiles directly over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's really everything there. And another one that I really like is faunaclassifieds.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they're set up similarly to kingsnake.com in having forums and access to breeders. But they also have a page called the Board of Inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place where people go and can post something like, I'm considering buying this animal from this breeder.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me anything about them? And people who have done business with them will answer that question. Yes, this person is trustworthy, their animals are good, or no, they're a little shady, I wouldn't
mm-hmm.
do business with them.
I think that sounds fantastic. And then if any of our listeners have any questions for you, is it cool if they contact you?
Absolutely.
And how can they reach you?
They can reach me via email.
Okay.
At soapmonkey.
Okay.
Dot gmail.
And how do you spell that?
It's SOAPMUNKY.
Okay. Great. And we are out of time. I hate this, Matt. You're so interesting, and I love this topic, and I want to talk to you again. However,
absolutely,
we can't today. I'm sorry. But I'm Celia Kutcher. I'm also known as the Food Healer. We're at Heritage Radio Network. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Next week, we're getting into alternative medicine, and next week's going to be about Reiki for animals. Tune in. That's going to be awesome. Take care, and have a great night.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.